All right, can you all hear me? My voice is a little shot, too. Maybe not from allergies, but from the UK ball game this weekend. I think everybody was hollering at that one. My name is Sam Flynn, as you heard. I'm executive director for Kentucky's Pre-K for All program. Today, I'm here to talk to you all a little bit about what our Pre-K for All initiative is and what it could mean for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. So back in June, the governor issued an executive order creating the Team Kentucky Pre-K for All Advisory Committee. And today what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you through sort of what we've done, where we're at right now, and where we're going with this initiative. And I want to talk a little bit about Kentucky's Pre-K program. So first of all, our mission is to ensure that all of Kentucky's 54,000 four-year-olds have access to preschool. This is not a new program. Can y'all hear me? I don't like the microphone. This is not a new program. Kentucky's had a preschool program for about 30 years or so now. We've had one since the passage of CARA. We've funded through state dollars every single year. We've done that since that time. The Pre-K for All initiative is about expanding preschool access so that every child in Kentucky can have that opportunity. It's not mandatory, it's voluntary. We know that some families want to keep their children home during that time, perfectly valid choice, or they want to send them to a specific private regulated child care program or Head Start or what have you. All perfectly valid points, but there's a lot of places in the state, and I'm sure many of you can think of them off the top of your head, where there isn't access to child care, right? Mom or dad have to stay at home or send their kids to grandma or grandpa's house so that they can go to work. In a lot of cases, they can't go to work. They've got to stay home with their children, right? That is an opportunity lost for those folks. The Trump White House in 2019 estimated 10.4 million Americans would go back to work but for access to child care, early childhood education opportunities for their kids. 86% of them are women. We're talking about moms and helping moms get back in the workforce. We're also talking about educational outcomes for kids, right? So what are the benefits of Pre-K for All? Why are we doing any of this, right? Well, what we've seen and what we've learned from looking at our state and looking at other states that have preschool programs and expanded preschool programs is that the benefits are incredible. First, in terms of kindergarten readiness, we've gone across the state with town halls, and we've heard in every single community that we've been in, from early childhood educators to superintendents to moms and dads, the impact this has on getting kids ready for kindergarten, right? Not just the math, not just the reading comprehension, which is, you know, you're learning how to rhyme at that age, right? You're learning your letters. But the impact is primarily in the social and emotional capacity, right? Kids are getting to interact with other kids. Kids are interacting with adults. Kids are having a structured environment. It has an incredible positive impact, as we've heard anecdotally and as we're going to talk about through the research, with respect to getting kids ready for kindergarten. Kentucky kids right now are 46% ready on day one. Nationally, it's 64%. We're behind the eight ball. Our kids aren't as ready as the kids who, when they become adults, they're going to be competing against for jobs. So again, the governor created the Team Kentucky Pre-K for All Advisory Committee to address this problem. Gave us two directives. One, go across the state and hear from Kentuckians about what's their experience with early childhood education and child care. Two, study what Kentucky's existing early childhood education model does, how it's funded, and what are the results. And three, looking at other states and what they have done. What can we learn from them? How can we deliver better results here in Kentucky? And that's what we did. We did a statewide launch tour, went across the Commonwealth. Incredible events, lots of folks turned out to be there. Again, this is our charge. This is our advisory committee. We've got folks from the Pritchard Committee. We've got the commissioner for Kentucky's Department for Education, who said this is one of their number one priorities this legislative session. We've got the chair of the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce. We've got former legislators, Republicans and Democrats. Judge Terry, who many of you all know well, is on our committee. We've got small town mayors. We've got educators. We've got folks from childcare, Head Start and Community Action, all on this committee, as well as folks from state government as well. And again, these folks are charged with going around the state, hearing from Kentuckians, and also doing the research and looking at the studies. We've done town halls in various parts of the Commonwealth, and we've done advisory committee meetings. And this is where our committees hear from the experts. I'm going to go over some of the research that we've seen with you all and talk about the impact that it's had. One, on children, two, on families, and three, on communities, right? So these are the three main places where this has an impact. On families and kids, on workforce development, and on our communities. First is academic outcomes. So benefits kids, as I mentioned, 46% of our kids are ready. National average is 64%. This is our kindergarten readiness rate in Kentucky. There's some bright spots here. Anything in green is over 50% ready, okay? There's a lot of places we need to do a lot of work. This is the Pennyrail area, and I'll make sure you all have access to this. There's a lot of really great information specific to this region. I want to make sure you guys have that, not just on kindergarten readiness or pre-K, but also for child care and the cost of child care. So a lot of really great information here, and I'm not going to dwell too much on that, but we know that just in Kentucky, kids are 54% ready for kindergarten if they've attended preschool in Kentucky. To be eligible, so right now, 14,500 of those 54,000 kids, so right around 27%, are eligible for state-funded preschool. And you'd be eligible two ways. One, you have a qualifying disability that allows you to participate in the program. Two, your family makes under 160% of the federal poverty line. It's the only way that you can be eligible for state-funded preschool. A lot of school districts are eating out of other parts of their budget to expand preschool access on their own. And they're doing it because they've seen these kinds of results. Right? The largest one being in Clark County, George Rogers Clark. I spoke with their superintendent last week. They talked about they're making a major investment at the district level to do this. But not every school district can afford to do that. Little League County in Eastern Kentucky might not be able to afford some of the things that Clark County might be able to. So we want to do this through state funding. Second, improves kindergarten readiness, sustained academic benefits over time. We're going to look at that for a moment. Broader developmental gains. So this is from Alabama. So Alabama's had a program for just over a decade. We had the person who designed their program, who's a current Republican state legislator in Alabama, talk about how important preschool access is and the impacts it has on language, cognitive ability, literacy, and math. So they all saw that it's clear kids that have access to preschool do better in each one of these areas than kids that do not have that. And it's not just in Alabama. Oklahoma, same outcomes. And we see it state after state after state after state. Oklahoma, Alabama. We look at Georgia and Mississippi. Georgia, kids that attended scored significantly higher in third grade. So this is sustained impact over time. Right? 1.5 times more likely to be proficient in third grade reading in Mississippi. 9 times more likely to be proficient readers in eighth grade. So not just are they kindergarten ready, this is academic benefits that last throughout their academic journey, right? So looking at pre-K and the benefits persisting to sixth grade, and this is in Des Moines, Iowa. Kids, 53% doing better than kids that did not have preschool. Moving on, again, Alabama. This is where the social and emotional piece comes in. Right? So many of the issues in our classrooms today have nothing to do with the actual coursework. Right? It's disciplinary issues. It's attendance issues. Expanding preschool access, as we've seen in Alabama, it reduces absenteeism. It reduces disciplinary issues that might otherwise come up in the classroom. Right? And it actually reduces interventions for early childhood special needs as well, as we've seen. So, Boston, kids that attended 6 points higher percentage-wise likelihood of graduation from college, or from high school, rather. And in Oklahoma, plus 12 percentage points increase in likelihood of college enrollment. And in Kentucky, one of the biggest predictors of whether you have a job and you are in the workforce, and this is not me, this is the University of Kentucky saying it in their 2025 economic research that they put out every single year, it's the number one predictor whether you have a job in Kentucky is if you have a bachelor's degree. Move on. So again, reducing rates of special education services. So again, every time we talk about the reduction in absenteeism, a reduction in these kinds of interventions, we're talking about savings, actually saving dollars. In 2009, the University of Kentucky did a study on expanding preschool, and not even doing it 100%, but just partially expanding preschool would have a 5-to-1 return on investment right here in Kentucky. So again, improving social and emotional benefits. Here's the other piece. This is huge for families. And we talked about childcare. Childcare is a huge driver of reduction in workforce because parents are staying home to stay with their kids because they cannot afford to send them to childcare. If they can even find childcare. This 2021 numbers right here, 2025, so it's gotten a little bit better. But we're already, and when we talk about childcare deserts, it's sort of a misnomer because we're defining success, which the green spots here, there's one seat for three kids. That's success, right? So two-thirds of the kids in the success counties have no access, okay? So this is not really a great indicator of where we are as a state because these ones in the red, it's 6-to-1, okay? So again, here's where the child care providers are here in the Penny Ryle area. A lot of great data. Again, I'll make sure that this gets to you so you guys can take a look at that. This shows that in Kentucky, our median income, $62,000. When we look at this and look at other states and what they're doing, we're looking at our peer states. We're looking at states like Oklahoma, West Virginia, Alabama, South Carolina, places that are geographically and demographically similar to us, Georgia. As you can see, Kentucky's right there in the middle in terms of how much people are making. But then when you pull up how much they're spending, we're making about the same or maybe a little bit less than some of our peer states. And we're paying significantly more for childcare. As you can see here, as a percentage of median household income, a lot of places in the state, so if you look at the Two Rivers area, you're looking at a 13% median household income. The Lakes area, 13% of median household income is spent on childcare here in Kentucky. And again, this is taken into account all the families, including the ones that are not spending any money on childcare. So significantly a large portion of people's take-home pay is being spent on this. Again, a lot of great data. Here's what I'm talking about. We're spending more than all of our peer states on childcare. Right? So significant portions of our families' take-home pay. We had a mom at the Moorhead event that we had talk about, look, I'm spending $10,000 a year to send my child to childcare. I would love to be able to send them to state-funded preschool. You know, what I could do with $10,000 more in my pocket each year. That's a 529 college savings plan. I could literally pay for my child to go to college by saving this money now rather than spending it as she's currently doing. Again, workforce participation among mothers, just a 10% reduction in the cost of childcare. We're not even talking about the expanding preschool access. Just a 10% reduction in the cost of childcare increases maternal employment by up to 2.5%. That's huge. Huge numbers, especially when we talk about the real impacts. So expanding preschool, this was a study done by Yale in Connecticut. 21% increase in earnings during the pre-K years amounts to about $7,000, and that persists for 6 years. So think about it in terms of an actual person, right? Mom has to leave the workforce because she's got to stay home with the kids, right? She's now missed promotional opportunities, potentially, right? She's missing out on all of those earnings. And now when she goes back to the workplace, right, and says, I want a job now that my kids are back in school or what have you, she's got to explain a gap in her resume, right? That's an issue. That's a significant issue, and it's hurting Kentucky families particularly, but it hurts families all across the United States. This boosts take-home pay, right? So not only is it saving parents money from, you know, spending it on childcare, but also is helping moms and dads get back in the workplace and earn extra money as well. Study, again, from the National Bureau of Economic Research, $9,000 per year. That study came out this year, right? And it's studying the states that we're looking at, like Oklahoma, Alabama, South Carolina, et cetera, and so forth. In Colorado, estimated $7,000 per year saving on childcare costs. So it doesn't completely wipe out those childcare costs. So, you know, you look at things like summer care, after school care, things like that. So families still pay some money on childcare, but this takes a significant bite out of that. Benefits communities. So talking about workforce participation, this is from the Wall Street Journal from a month and a half ago. Parents, and this is, why is pre-K good for a parent's career? They're more likely to participate in the labor force, more likely to work a single job instead of two jobs, fewer gaps in their career, and less likely to switch industries, right? This creates stability in our labor force. We had a presentation earlier, and I think it's a great one, talking about all of the economic development happening here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. What are the first couple things that people ask? Well, how are you going to fill those jobs, and who's going to fill them, right? This is a workforce development program just as much as it's an education program for our kids. This is our workforce participation. You know, some really, really great spots, some really, really rough spots. And then when you look at it versus our peer states, all right, we're doing better than West Virginia. We're doing about as well as Tennessee. But we're behind the eight ball on Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, and Virginia. And we're competing with them for new investments. Every single time we talk about new economic development and who we're competing with, these are the places we're competing with. Tennessee and others as well. When new employers come to the Commonwealth, Candace McGraw, she's a former chair of Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, and she ran CVG, the airport in Northern Kentucky, said, look, there are three things that new employers ask about when they come to Kentucky, right? Before they relocate their business, they say, what are you doing about infrastructure, right? There's a lot of great work being done on that, certainly. They ask, what are you doing about housing? And they ask, what are you doing about child care and early childhood education, right? That third part is what we're trying to address. Estimated between 40 and 70,000 Kentuckians would return to the workforce if we provide expanded pre-K access. That's a huge, huge number. I would challenge anybody in this room and anywhere in the state, another policy that is being talked about in Frankfort or anywhere else that is going to get that many Kentuckians back to work sooner rather than later. There's just not one that's being talked about anywhere in the state that will do this. Again, creating new jobs for educators. So this is not just jobs, period, but creating jobs in education, right? It's almost, if you build it, they will come. You create more classrooms for people to be educated in. That's a driver for teachers and an opportunity for people to teach. And they saw a significant growth in Alabama classrooms. Again, in terms of the return on investment, the ROI is biggest with parents. We've got a gradient up here so you can see sort of what the biggest impact is. It's first, it's parents' earnings. and increase tax revenue, right? This is a program that's going to be focused on primarily working families. If you're a poor family or your child has a disability, you already have access, right? But probably to Head Start and to this. If your family is wealthy, you probably already have your child or your kids in some private regulated child care and getting them the best thing that you can possibly get them. This is for the families that are in between. This is for the working class families and the middle class families who spend their money immediately and locally. Parents' earnings and increased tax revenue, reduced reliance on other social programs, we're going to talk about that in a minute, and increased earnings for the children who actually participate in it. So, incredible study here talking about kids that are in preschool programs are more likely to have health insurance and less likely to report drug abuse when they become adults, which is incredible, right? That's less supervision, less jail time, less ER visits. This is a net benefit in terms of the amount that we're spending on social programs. Some other ones that we have here, kids reporting that they're in good health versus not, employed versus not, the percentage difference between those who were in these preschool programs versus not. And we can go on and on and on about the data, right? There's Candace McGraw there, Judge Pendry, Campbell County Judge Executive, who has just endorsed as of this morning, about 15 minutes ago, expanding preschool access in Kentucky. I think we've got over 30 county judges already signed up. I think we've got 25, 26 mayors, starting with the largest cities in Kentucky and moving all the way down through our smaller towns. People support this initiative because it's good for families and kids, and it's good for our communities. I want to talk for just a minute about what's next and where we're at. We're currently drafting a report that our advisory committee will review, approve, and we'll send it to the legislature ultimately this fall. The governor's office will get a copy. That's our directive. Provide him with this report, and the governor will then issue a plan, a legislative package, to the General Assembly. We want to do this in a phased and responsible way. We know that you don't devour a whale in one bite, you do it one bite at a time. In Alabama, they did it over the course of about a decade, and they're still expanding. That is what we hope to do. So we're not going to walk over to the legislature and ask for the moon. Certainly would love to have it tomorrow, but we're going to go over and ask for a phased and responsible approach, give the agencies opportunities to get the regulations in place, allow school districts to do long-term planning, right? Because some of them may raise their hand and say, we're ready to go now. Some of them might say, well, you know, it might be 2 or 3 years before we can do this expansion. So we want to grow as we can, and we want to give school districts the flexibility to grow as we go. We want to make sure that we utilize all of our existing infrastructure, so we incorporate Head Start, we incorporate community action, we incorporate private regulated child care in this as well. All with the goal of making sure that every Kentucky family has that opportunity and that all of the kids in Kentucky can benefit immediately from being more kindergarten ready, from all of the impacts that they can possibly have down the road in terms of reduced absenteeism, reduced disciplinary issues, better health outcomes, better career outcomes, and then of course the benefits that the family and our Kentucky communities have. 88% of our town halls say they strongly support this. Is mainly parents and educators. There's a similar poll that's out there that is of superintendents. I can tell you over 90% of superintendents support expanding preschool access immediately. And of those who don't, cited it as an issue that they had another priority, for example, teacher pay. Over 27,000 Kentuckians have contacted their legislature through our online portal and say they support expanding preschool access. I apologize to you, Senator Richardson, for doing that. I'm sure your inbox is blown up, but we certainly appreciate your time and your attention to this as well. And
we want to make sure that the Kentuckians' voices are heard, and I know that, you certainly can appreciate that as well. So, how to get involved? You can call your legislator. You can go and sit in their office, set a meeting with them. It actually matters to hear from people that are in their communities, and so I would encourage you all to do that. You can also go to our website, prekforall.ky.gov, and you can fill out this form. It will send an email to your legislator. You can tell them why you support expanding preschool access, and you can certainly call them as well. Again, we're talking about an existing program that we've been doing for 30 years. We've seen other states benefit from expanding their programs. We would like to expand our program. We want to do it in a meaningful way. We want to do it in a phased and responsible way. And we want to see the benefits and the results that other states are seeing so that we can continue to compete and do right by our families. I want to open it up for questions. I know I took a lot of time, and I apologize, but does anybody have any questions about what I've said here? And certainly, if you have questions offline, I can address those as well.
What about transportation for these children? If they're only going a half a day, how are they going to get back and forth?
So this is a great question. So we basically get three primary questions. One's about transportation, one's about facilities, and one's about staffing. Great question about transportation. We're looking at a model where kids would have more time and that there would be, with private regulated childcare as a partner, an opportunity for wraparound care, so kids would not have to be transported, you know, three times during the day. It's transported twice during the day, right? In the morning and in the evening. Does that make sense?
Who's transporting them? Like, do you have public transportation? Okay.
School districts. Yep.
Yeah, so if the state gets in the daycare business, what's going to happen to these private daycares? Will it cause their tuition rates to go up, puts additional pressure on those that would stay?
So this,
essentially, you're taking 20% of their.
So this is a question. The question was, what happens when the state gets in the daycare business? First of all, this is not daycare. This is preschool. Kentucky's been involved with preschool since 1992. We do it for 14,500 kids every single year, and we've been doing that since that time. This is expanding preschool program, which is an educational program. Secondly, under current law, private regulated childcare can actually partner with, and school districts can partner with, private regulated childcare to provide the wraparound services. What we want to do is we want to actually give them more opportunities to actually provide the services themselves, which is something that's been very successful in other states. So it won't have a negative impact. In fact, there was a memo sent from NYIER, I believe, to the Pritchard Committee just this past week that said, in fact, there's not a negative impact, but possibly a positive impact of opening up more seats and allowing more kids to have that experience. So one, they can provide the services. Two, they can provide the wraparound care. And three, they'd actually be able to serve more kids, potentially. Other questions?
Sam, yes. with respect to the slide that you showed, the cost of child care,
yep,
in the state of Kentucky versus the other states you were comparing to.
Yep.
And Kentucky seemed to be quite a bit higher.
Yep.
I don't know if you know the reason for that, but could part of that be for child care credits that those states might offer in their tax codes?
So one of the reasons is these states have expanded preschool access, so families are actually having to pay less across the board for child care. A lot of them are still paying for child care in the summer, for example, or paying for after-school care. In some of these states, they certainly do have different programs to help address some of this. The other thing that is a huge, it's ultimately comes down to supply and demand. We just do not have the depth in our child care industry to provide all the seats necessary, as I showed you earlier, which means that the cost dramatically goes up. Other questions? Yes, sir.
What would be the initial ask for the Kentucky General Assembly? I mean, what's a bottom line, maybe dollar figure to get this started?
Yeah. So currently the state invests about $87 million a year to serve those 14,500 kids. Okay.
That's 27%. One of the best programs in the country would be between 60-65%. We're talking about 18,000, 19,000, 20,000 more kids, and that's if they decided to enroll. There's a lot of states that are certainly less than that. So what we're talking about is doing that chunks at a time, right? Expanding a little bit at a time over the course of probably 4 or 5 biennium, right? That's the way that Alabama did it. And they've done it very successfully. And that's allowed them to modify the delivery as they've gone along, and also ensure that the budget requests are not you know, significantly higher each year. So I would imagine the number that you traditionally see out there is 100% eligibility and 100% enrollment, right? So if every single four-year-old, all 54,000 were to do it, it would be like $172 million. We know that at most 60% will actually attend, and we don't want to actually grow to that until we get to that 8-10 year mark, so significantly less. But we want to make sure that it's a responsible ask and one that is measured, that will grow over time, right? And that gives the General Assembly the ability to look at the budget numbers and all the priorities and make responsible decisions over the course of the next decade. But again, taking a smart step in the right direction, and then of course letting them lead the way on policy.
Roll that process, like what counties participate?
So that's a great question. So one of the things we've done is go district by district and talk to them about when they can be ready. And that's something that we'd use in our calculation for the first time. So first year, likely no budgetary ask, a very, very small one, right? Let AD put the ranks together. Then build in long-term planning for school districts. Right, so they can tell the General Assembly, hey, this many are going to be ready in this year, this many are going to be ready in 2029, this many in 2030, 31, and so on and so forth. And that way, the General Assembly knows what the budgetary ask is going to look like as we move into the future. Right, so again, starting small, but taking a meaningful step in the right direction.
If local school districts need facility expansions, how do you see that being financed?
So this is another good question. One of the things that we're looking at is looking at a separate pot of money that school districts would be allowed to apply to, so that, for example, if they, let's say they have the room, but they don't have something that the regulations required, like that bathroom that's got to be attached to the room for four-year-olds. This would allow them to apply, dip into that pot of money, and ultimately build that facility. The other thing is, by allowing school districts to partner with Head Start and Community Action, we can actually leverage facilities that are already built or already conforming elsewhere, right? So school districts can certainly do that. I know in Clark County, for example, and Boone County is looking at doing this as well, but in Clark County, they actually built an early childhood education center where a lot of the employees are you know, state KDE employees or district employees, and then a lot of the folks that come in to provide the wraparound are actually private regulated child care folks. So that's one way to certainly do it. Another way is kind of the outsource, like use your infrastructure, and another way would be applied to that fund to build more facilities. Other questions? Yes.
Okay, Sam, most of the Lieutenant Governor in Allen County, and we were at a Head Start facility. They had updated it, and I was talking to the Head Start director, and we were discussing the project, and she said, I don't expect anything to happen to Head Start, because a lot of people, I taught Head Start years ago, a lot of people have said, oh, it's going to knock out Head Start. Just as reassure that you guys are working with Head Start.
That's
she
right.
said, we would be glad to take third graders.
Yep. So, yeah, you're talking about the three-year-olds.
Yeah.
She'd be glad to take
it. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, this does not work in conflict with Head Start and actually works together with Head Start. So Head Start currently serves about 6,000 four-year-olds currently here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. They do a great job. We actually met with the Kentucky Head Start Association 3 or 4 weeks ago, I'm losing track of time, and community action about how we want to work together with them. Fully utilize federal dollars, every single dollar we can get from the federal government to provide blended services, absolutely want to do that. But I want to be clear, the federal government's not coming to save us on preschool. They are not, right? There are grants that school districts currently apply to, and some school districts have some really nice programs as a result. But every single year, they're back out there trying to apply for funding again for a block grant that may not be there the next time there's a federal budget. So this is something that we're going to have to do together as a state, that other states have done, and that they have seen tremendous success. And if we don't do it now, we're going to be asking why we didn't do it 20 years from now, while the states nearby are racing ahead of us. So I encourage you all, if you feel strongly about helping kids get a better education, helping families save money and maybe make some more money, grow our labor force and compete with our neighbors to the south, the north, the east, and the west, please talk to your legislators about this. We've seen a ton of growing support for it, and we'd certainly love to have yours as well. Thank you all so much.
Judge, I appreciate your time. Thank you. Sorry I went long. No, you're fine.